Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hey, Energy Matters listeners, welcome back to another episode. It has been a minute, but Cody and I are coming to you from where we were coming to you from before this whole pandemic started, from our rooms. So not that much has changed with us.
From our basements, yeah.
Yeah. Cody's in his mom's basement, and I am in mine.
David's in his mom's, and we were self-isolating and distancing all along.
I've been self-isolating my entire life. So we wanted to do a special episode today, talk about what's happening in the world, how to manage it on an energetic level, how to use meditation to keep yourself grounded and calm and creative and not just freak out and match all the fear or anxiety in the world, and maybe even have a good time while this is happening, and how to use isolation to help yourself find some solitude, or maybe go from feeling lonely to feeling solitude. And there's a difference, and we could talk about that. So there's been a lot going on since our last episode. It took us a minute to record, but it's good to be back with you, Cody.
Yeah, likewise. It did take us a minute. Although that, as you say, we've been gone a quick minute. It's kind of the longest, shortest time.
Yeah, it feels like
you know, it's like things are melding together, and day after day is like, what day is it? And then things are dragging on at certain points. But it is a great time to meditate. And I think, of course, we've both been pretty busy with doing extra meditating, not ourselves, but teaching and doing extra meditations for people on getting through the energy and kind of surviving this social upheaval as everything's turned upside down. But for the most part, I think we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and we have a beautiful intuitive training group that we started a month ago with. They're coming along nicely, baking in the oven.
That's right.
Their third eyes slowly baking.
Third eyes opening up, yeah.
Yeah.
That's been really exciting, actually, with so much change going on. All of the various tools that we teach are really hitting home, and I think have a deeper meaning when we're confronted with so much change and adversity and just up and down. So it's been a really great group.
Yeah. And it has lovely group. We're really going to enjoy watching them flower over the next 7 years, because that's how long their training is. Don't tell them. So let's start with a couple of jokes for this special moment in history. I got a few good quarantine jokes.
You do.
Yes. All right. Well, you've got a couple too. I'll start.
I just saw one. I just saw one,
which was
just a personal ad for the day, which is man with toilet paper seeking woman with hand sanitizer for some good clean fun.
That's good. I like that. All right. I got one. Let's see. I struck up a conversation with a spider today. Seems nice. He's a web designer.
Okay, that is almost like a dad joke right there. That is so corny. I'm a dad, so I should have all the dad jokes.
You totally should. Strawberry, day three, strawberries. Some have 210 seeds, some have 235 seeds. Who knew?
Oh, that's funny. I saw a number of those early on about rice.
About rice.
I'm not bored, but I am curious as to why one bag of rice. Yes, that's funny. It is good that people are able to find a little amusement here and there. I saw a funny little clip the other day. Someone had written up of a mom seen her daughter outside playing, say, "What are you doing outside playing? You're supposed to be in class." And she said, "Oh, Mom, I just took a screenshot of myself and posted it in my Zoom profile, and the teacher will never know. There's 30 kids." And then it says, "She's only 10.
All right, I got one on homeschooling. Day 6 of homeschooling, my child just said, "I hope I don't have the same teacher next year."
That's a good one.
Or let's see, homeschooling day 7. One of these little monsters just called in a bomb threat. And then, all right, last one. I shared this in the meditation I taught earlier today. My body has absorbed so much soap and disinfectant lately that when I pee, it cleans the toilet.
That's a good one.
All right. Well, here we are. I know there's a lot of serious stuff going on the planet. We just wanted to light up the mood a little bit before we dive into everything. And it has been an intense time. There's a lot of suffering for sure. The first pandemic, I guess, the Earth has seen since 1918, I believe.
I think that was the real last big one, yeah, 1918.
Which is kind of interesting because World War One, I think, started 19... I don't know if it started 1917. Is the same time. Yeah. And that's how a lot of it was passing soldier to soldier.
A lot of travel, world travel then, yeah.
One of the things that I've noticed, so that pandemic, I'm sure it had a massive effect on the war. And this one, I'm noticing it's having an effect on slowing down environmental degradation. So I live in LA. It's the first time I've ever lived here where you can like see the stars somewhat. There's less pollution. You can see the mountain ranges further away. It's the first time in 30 years that you can see the Himalayan mountains from New Delhi. There's dolphins swimming in the canals in Venice. And the other day I heard somebody saying that they were seeing bobcats in their backyard in LA for the first time in a very long time. In South Africa, there were tigers laying on the roads because there's no cars. There are some
creeping back
so quickly.
Yes,
as we slow down for a moment. So putting the sickness aside for a moment. And just looking at like, wow, humanity is taking a forced break for the first time in 100 years. I don't know. I don't know if they took a break then. I'm not sure. It's kind of, yeah. It's what I find really fascinating is that everyone's like, "We got to get back to work." And then they're going to go back to work and be like, "I would have loved to have been home for longer." Like, no, I get the financial part of it, right? You have to pay the bills and buy food. Of course. But it's like we are searching for time and space. Please give me some space. And then we get it because it's not under the circumstances that we want, on like a beach chair in Hawaii or something, that we're in resistance to it. And then we don't use the time wisely.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have it and accept it and just relax into it when it feels forced. It's kind of funny. I've spoken with a couple of people who said, retired people said, "Well, you know, I'm retired and I really don't do that much. But now that I can't go out, I want to go out more." Yeah. Right? We suddenly feel caged a little bit, or we feel a little bit out of control in many ways.
But I've noticed how little my life has changed, actually.
Right. That was what I noticed. Because I work from home, right? And I do a lot of teaching. Everything's online and a lot of counseling online and all kinds of stuff. And my personal joke has been, "Boy, when this is over, I got to get out more because this doesn't feel any different."
Yeah, I've noticed I don't get out nearly enough and take advantage of Southern California enough.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but I understand many people. It's an entire shift from the normal pace of life. And you know, it's not like our routines, my routines haven't been broken up, and my daughter had to come home from college, and everything's, you know, very different right now. I think the thing that stands out to me about it, when you were talking just about the environmental thing, and then of course we have the social distancing, and we have this greater awareness of our own spaces. It's really, not only are we kind of having to slow down and stop, but it's a great time to really look at our relationship to everything, whether it's the environment and the world, and just those examples of wildlife coming back in. There's a relationship we have to the natural world that for so long, for us as developing humans, we've been pushing the natural world back and farther away and getting space from it as a way to maybe survive it or control it. But now it seems like we're at a point in time where we need to rebalance that relationship and redefine how we relate to the natural world and also our relationship to each other. I've just noticed such a heightened awareness of that and such a different feeling as I interact with people, and depending on what they're going through, you know, a lot more awareness and concern about how other people are doing, whether it's our older, you know, my parents and people like that, or I have a great psychic friend who works at Whole Foods, and I've been really kind of concerned about him and talking to him as much as possible. You know, it's just that to me, that's the thing that stands out is this question of not only where am I, but how am I relating to this world and how might I want that to be different as we come out of this?
Yeah, there's an app called Nextdoor that I use, or Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not sure. I have to look it up here on my phone. And it's really, really good because it tells you exactly what's going on in your particular neighborhood. You know, if there's a robbery or there's a road closure, but then people post like, hey, so-and-so needs help getting groceries, or this person doesn't have money. And you can go around and just help your neighbors in your whatever, one or few mile vicinity of your house. I heard a loud bang in my neighborhood the other day, and I went on and people were talking about what it was. And it turned out to be the cops blowing something up because they thought they didn't know what the object was.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Wow. And so if you don't have that app, I just gave you two different names for it. It's called Nextdoor. Neither was right. Or did I say that? I'm not sure.
You said Nextdoor.
Oh, Nextdoor. Yeah. And I really like it. That one's been good. So
a way to help connect neighbor-wise.
Yeah, if you've been super isolated, check in on that app. Unless you live in the country and there's nobody for 30 miles. I don't know if it'll do you any good.
Yeah, and where we live, we have a lot of greenways to walk and things. So people are out walking and you know, keeping distance and wearing masks and what have you. But also, you know, aware of each other, waving, saying hi. There's a lot more kind of interaction and acknowledgement of each other, even at a distance. So there's this greater kind of awareness and closeness, even at a distance, than normal. It's pretty amazing. We were walking by a lady's house. She just happened to be out checking the mail, and we said hi to her, and she was an older lady, and she says, you know, I've lived here like 20 years, and I've seen more people walk by in the last 2 weeks than in the whole time I've lived here.
Yeah.
And it's like everybody has to get out and walk a little bit, but we're not interacting, you know, in close proximity.
I mean, I
don't know what it's like in LA there. Like what?
Yeah, kind same
of space you have.
I had to drive to Santa Monica recently from where I live, and with traffic at like on a Friday at 5 p.m., it could take well over an hour. And, or in the morning, actually, it's the other way around. But it took me 15 or 18 minutes. It was like an insane record.
Wow.
And I have never seen the streets in LA so empty. Maybe they will never be this empty again. And there's something really nice about that. I was like, oh man, I could live here a little longer
if there wasn't that congested.
Yeah. Luckily, I work from home and I walk everywhere, so I don't experience traffic almost ever. You know, it's very rare for me. I live in a little bubble, kind of. So, but that was cool to experience that. And Southern California is gorgeous. There's so many hiking trails and places to go, you know, just a few hours drive in any direction. So it's pretty cool. So we've got this pandemic happening. There's an intensity on the planet. I think it's spread to over 170 countries. At the time of this recording, I think like 40,000 people just in America have died. And millions all over the world have it. It's sad to watch it get political, that like people have to fight about solutions. It's like, all right, you have one idea, they have another. Why don't we listen to smart people and try to find
the best one,
best solution, so people don't die. And I don't get why it has to get so political. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I guess everything kind of does.
Yeah, I guess at every level, you know, people have their power or their control, and they're reluctant to give it up or let it change when something like this really forces a change.
I think it would be
ways. And it would be great if people could be more flexible and kind of shifting with the needs and kind of, but yeah.
If everyone just recognized that I was right.
Right.
And had the best plan.
You have a plan?
No. Yeah, we all wear Tickle Me Elmo suits, like full body. And we go outside and tickle each other at a distance, of course.
At a distance.
We're wearing suits. Yeah.
You know, it is one of the things that I do find in the midst of all this, because it is just this ongoing thing, right? It's not like something, you know, like an earthquake that just happens and then it's done and now we're on to the next thing. This is like a slow rolling issue that nobody knows how long it's really going to last. And some people are worried about whether things will get back to normal. I think it's fine that things are going to get back maybe to a new normal. But there was a pandemic in 1918 and it perhaps changed many things, but things did go back, you know, to some semblance of everything being normal or recreated.
Until World War II.
Right. Well, no, we had the Roaring Twenties, which maybe was
until the Great Depression.
Until the Great Depression. But what's funny to me about this, the memories that have come back to me, when in my youth, I got to have my grandfather come live with us when he was 89, 90.
Oh, during the first pandemic when you were a child.
Not when I was a child. He lived through the first pandemic, the 1918. And it kind of brought back a lot of memories that I don't really remember him talking a whole lot about the Great Depression, which he also lived through. And most old people I've known over my lifetime would have stories about the Great Depression. And I'm sure he had some, but I remember him speaking a lot about the pandemic. Like that was the thing that really shifted something for him. And I sure wish I was like 18, 19 at the time that he lived with us. I spent a lot of time with him. And now I'm wishing I had really like sat down and said, tell me, you know, about some of these events, these world events. Of course, at that age, I didn't really have the wherewithal to do that, but the stories he would share were just about the impact of and the effect of having people, you know, die basically, and just that it was pretty devastating in that time. I don't think we have something like that going on, partly perhaps because we have a little better understanding of what's happening, and we have a lot of history to draw on.
Technology and supply chains. We have a beautiful supply chain of toilet paper, seems to be continuing. If you took somebody from like the 1800s and you put them in your house or apartment and you said, listen, there's a pandemic, you have to stay here, Well, you can go out actually whenever you want. Just go to the supermarket, buy as much as you want. Just put on credit for now. No one's going to have to pay that back, right? And then just come home. And they're like, wait, you have running water anytime you move this this thing over? Yeah. Right. And it's warm and I could drink it.
And there's food.
And there's endless amounts of food. I'm not really paying for it, or I am. I'm confused. And then I just sit here. It's like, I don't think it's as bad as 1918 for most people.
Yeah. At least in the developed countries.
In the developed world, obviously, yeah. Sure. In the United States and Europe. In the third world, it's going to be way harder because they don't have the hospital bed capacity, and they don't have everyone lives very close. So hopefully they're able to find a way to mitigate it, or we come up with some drugs that can slow it down or eventually cure it sooner than later. What I do know is, I could be wrong, but eventually we will almost definitely find a cure. I forget if it was for SARS or MERS. It took them like 5 months to sequence it. And with this one, with the technology advances, it took us like 2 days to sequence the virus. So we're making leaps and bounds on the technology front, and I wouldn't be surprised inside the next 18 months if they found a way to cure it. But if it's going to take that long, we're going to be doing a lot of meditating.
Yeah, right. But my point with the idea, the memories from my grandfather coming up, is that, you know, that was a defining moment in his life. And he lived to be like 93 or 4. And, you know, it was in his late 80s that he was, and into his 90s, he was talking. And it's like, we're living through one of those inflection points right now. We're living through history, and in a way we're creating it as we come out of it. And so that to me is the question, you know, what do we want to create, and how do we want to kind of reset things or look at things differently when it's everything's kind of turned upside down? Is a great time to get a different perspective on everything. Yeah. And, you know, we raced to get back to normal, but for some of us, maybe normal wasn't exactly the best. Maybe there's a new best we can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we look out at the landscape, like in the media, and in just a lot of areas of our culture, what we see, especially on TV, is like the least common denominator energy, which is like perpetual fear. Let me update you 32 times a day about how many people have died, what politician is doing what wrong, why you're not safe. You know, it's like this perpetual fear, just like pumping.
We're being sold that content all the time.
If the news media didn't have to make money and it just did, it was not part of its equation, I wonder what it would look like. I think it would just be a lot more longer form and informative. And I think in all of these inflection points in history, there's always seems to be a battle between rationality, people who are reasonable and want peace, and people who are afraid and in like conspiracy theory energy, or just emotionally reacting, racism, tribalism. Like when my grandfather tells me about how he lived through World War II, and how the...
And was he in Russia?
Russia, in Belarus. Yeah.
Yes.
And how his neighbors, they were starting to say, people were starting to murmur, the Germans are coming. And his neighbors were like, no, we don't have to worry about the Germans. It's the Polish. Those are the ones we should watch out for. And it was this, you know, it's amazing how people process information and make decisions. Sometimes it's so emotional or tribal and it's unreasonable. And I think when we're really reasonable, you realize that actually most people agree like 90% of the way about most things. And then that 10% is usually there's not enough information, that we don't have enough information, or our values maybe are just a little different. But I think there's a lot more agreement than it seems when you look out at the media. Most people want to stay safe. They don't want anyone to die. They want the economy to be okay, but they also don't want to open it up prematurely and put people in jeopardy. I mean, everybody kind of agrees on all of that. And then the specifics is where it gets hard because we live in a very complicated society. It's not that easy to solve these problems.
Yeah, definitely. It is. I think that core kind of value system of taking care of people and you know, having concern for our fellow human being. And I think most people certainly have that. And where it does get a little complicated is in how to achieve that and what the balance is. And I don't really have any answers about that kind of stuff.
You're not
meditation. No, and I'm not a politician. So I tend to take the perspective of turning inward and kind of finding your own inner balance and approaching the world in integrity with that. And
you know, what I've noticed is that there's a lot of new meditation teachers and breathwork teachers and yoga teachers in the last few weeks online. on social media and elsewhere. I've been getting solicited constantly too of new projects, people wanting me to be part of new projects, meditation projects of different kinds. People are just like super thirsty for some mental, emotional, spiritual help with this. And if you're listening to this, you might be a little guilty of overriding your feelings and your energy by just like binge watching stuff and avoiding. But I feel like after a while, you just kind of, if you're isolated long enough, you give up. You're like, all right, now what? All right, let's meditate. So if you've gotten to that point, good. It's a good thing. Yeah. So then the question becomes, all right, I am isolated. I can't change the world. I can't fix it all by myself. What can I do from the inside out? And I think that's a very important question to be asking yourself, and finding meditation tools and growth tools that work for you. Everybody's a bit different, you know? And so if this show works for you, if you listen to Cody and I a lot, like, all right, guys, what do we do? What do you think we should do? I'll let Cody tell you.
Yeah, and I like your description of giving up. It's like, you know, we have all these things that we can do to distract ourselves, and not that those aren't fun things. You know, I mean, I certainly have had my share of watching.
You've Netflix watched your Schitt's Creek,
yeah. Watch the stuff. But there is that point where even that isn't enough. And you know, for most people that I've taught over the years of people that are like, seeking intuitive training or meditation tools, they've kind of reached that point in their life somehow anyway of going, well, all of this doesn't seem to be working, or it's not enough. You know, what is that deeper answer? And I think as we're stuck isolating or stuck in so much uncertainty in a world that's so uncertain, that is one of the things that comes up pretty easily. Is like, well, there's got to be a better answer. There's got to be something I can do to kind of reconnect and refine maybe that new path forward.
Yeah, I've been listening to Eckhart Tolle on isolation, on loneliness recently. Just wanted to see what wisdom he had to shine on it, which he has so much on every topic that he talks about. It was fascinating though. I watched one clip where this young guy said, so Eckhart, I've been doing nothing for a year and a half. It's like, I went to India, now I'm following you around. And just kind of been doing nothing. And I was really surprised by Eckhart's response, which was, you're not running out of money yet? Which is what his first question. And the guy was just kind of like, no. And then Eckhart was like, And then it was really interesting. Eckhart kind of set him straight because he said, you know, when I sat and did nothing for a long time. He sat on a park bench for a couple of years. He said, I didn't choose to do that. He goes, it just happened. It was like I went through this radical change and then it just happened. But you can't force yourself into doing nothing. And then he kind of lightly guided the guy and said, are you in a relationship? No. He said, well, maybe at some point doing nothing starts causing you pain and suffering so much that you're just lonely and not doing anything. And then so you get in a relationship. And then that starts causing you suffering and pain. And then you go back to being alone. And he goes, so doing nothing or not doing nothing is not really the point. It's, are you present in wherever you are? And I love this part. This is my favorite part. He said, we're human and being. Part of us sits in being. And then we also have to be human and do things. And you can do things with the awareness of being. And that's what's most important. And I just love that advice he gave to this guy. It was a gentle, go out and get a partner, get a job, get a life, get a life, and be present at the same time. Doing nothing is not necessarily going to bring you something. Nothing right. was an outcome of that card's experience. So even in isolation, you can sit in being, but you can also do something. If there's a project you've been waiting to do for a long time or create something or build something, I mean, what a great opportunity, right? So don't just do nothing because you think that'll get you something.
That's a funny, yeah, funny phrase, do nothing because it'll get you something. Yeah. Well, you know, and even meditating, you know, someone looks at someone who's meditating and says, well, you're not doing anything when you're meditating. And I've followed Eckhart's teachings a bit and, you know, kind of listened to him and gone into some of the spaces he talks about. And even in the doing nothing that he talks about, you are doing something, right? There's this presence that you're becoming aware of or that's arising. Or even when we teach meditation, you are doing something. It's just you're stepping into a different way to perceive the world. It's through that lens of being, and it's starting to recognize, well, what is the way that being exists or expresses or kind of interplays in you, through you, and into the world. And while it's nothing in the sense of what we think of, you know, building something physically, manipulating the physical world, there is certainly something to it. But it is a funny play on words, doing nothing.
I did that. I did the nothing for a while. I traveled around the world and did the nothing for a minute there, for a couple of years.
Right. But and yet, what were you doing? You were gaining all of these experiences that you're drawing on now. So of course you were developing something. I think that we can get into this kind of circular mind play when we kind of look at it through that lens of doing nothing. I like a question a good friend of mine asked a number of years ago about going inward and meditating. And he said, can you go in and sit down and meditate for no particular reason? Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're not doing nothing, because a lot of people are meditating and in their mind, they might be telling themselves, well, I'm going to do nothing, but they have a reason behind it. Well, because I'm going to improve myself, or because I want to get this in life, or because I want to do that. And it's not that you have to do nothing. It's that, can you step out of all of the conditioned, programmed reasons that are driving you to get to that deeper drive that it's not really a drive that arises in you, that when you do that thing or when you focus your energy in that way, you feel fulfilled, you feel accomplished. Yeah. You don't feel like you're chasing something. You feel like you're creating something. And those two very different ways of being.
Or you can just meditate because girls like it. He's sensitive.
That's David's.
Yeah. All my Instagram pictures, just me, just like, I love when I get calls from like from companies and be like, come teach our company meditation so they can be more productive. Yes, get back on that treadmill, be more productive so I could squeeze a nickel out of you. Help them, David. It's like, well, they're miserable because they work from you. So I'm going to help them unwind that and slowly disappear out the back door. They never call me back. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny one. I think, you know, there are two very different maybe aspects of meditating. There is the part of it where it's stress reduction and it helps you to find a place where you feel better. And, you know, you maybe will become more productive when you are less stressed and you feel better and you're clearer minded. And then there's kind of the spiritual pursuit side, which is one where you are kind of changing maybe who you are and changing what you want, or reevaluating what you're about and what you want in life. And that process doesn't necessarily create more productivity. It kind of creates a time of change where things are in flux and things are kind of up and down. And it's not all about being more productive, at least not in the short term. I think you become more aligned in the long term, and you kind of measure productivity a little differently. It's maybe not about output, it's about the input side of it. Like, you shift in that way.
Maybe we should make a meditation helmet where you just put it on and it meditates for you. And then you just like, oh, I'm done. You know, like those app things you put on your
Send
app.
Certain waves, yeah, brain waves.
They have things like that, I guess.
They already do.
Yeah, and that'll calm you down. I think that's fine. It won't get you to the deepest place inside yourself, or maybe help you find all your answers. But I'm not against anything that helps you feel better.
No. I think the reason none of those things can get us to some of those deeper places is the whole journey to finding your answers is about kind of asking the right question, and none of those things are going to ask the right question for you. You have to find that for yourself. So,
yeah, absolutely. So if you've been in quarantine avoiding that, sit your tuchus down and start asking the right questions is what Cody's trying to tell you. So little psychic weather here, you know, sometimes when I like to look at the planet, you know, on an energetic level, especially during this pandemic, you can see like huge clouds of fear, huge clouds of anxiety, huge clouds of anger, you know, storms of fighting and just all of this intense
catastrophizing and
energy. And I think it's important that you recognize that you might be more aware of that than you think. But maybe you only realize it when you like turn on the news and you're like, but it's actually always all there. And even with the news turned off, even isolated in your house, like that energy affects us, that collective energy in the species that says something is wrong, be afraid or hide, or you should be anxious. And learning how not to just become that and just join that crowd, that mob of energy, and really have your own ideas, get your own answers. That doesn't mean you don't protect yourself, but you don't do it by just kind of unconsciously going with the herd. I think that is something that will keep you sane. So I literally will see like waves of color in the ethers above me. Sometimes I'll like peek up and go, ooh, that's a big wave of anxiety in this neighborhood. I don't know. I'll just see things like that sometime. So then I'll just run. Just kidding.
Hide under a rock.
Police officer, there is a wave of invisible anxiety above your head. You can't see it, but I can. Why are you taking me away?
But that is certainly part of the concept we teach in meditating is finding your own space, which basically boils down to kind of separating from that group energy and finding kind of your own center and your own grounding and balance and connecting with your own energy, which ultimately feels good. I mean, that's the thing that feels good when you're connected in that way. And it feels, it's kind of funny because sometimes it can feel energetic or almost exciting to get caught up in some of those waves that are basically a little bit fear, a little bit hysteria, and a little bit of I'm doing something, I'm solving. And it's great to get out in the world and do what we can do. But, you know, when you're just sitting in those waves and you can't sleep and you can't like maintain balance and with your body, and then that can be really disruptive to your own health and connection.
I've just, sometimes I just knock on my neighbor's door and I scream, we're all screwed, and I just run away. And that's kind of been helping me release stress.
Yeah, that's a good one.
If you challenge for everyone listening, see if you can meditate for an hour a day. I know that might seem a lot, but sit for an hour a day. The bigger the energy out there, the more you need your space, the more you need to be resilient, the more you need to be able to handle the chaos of people's fear and anxiety. So the way you used to meditate might not be enough anymore. You might have to take it up a notch, or maybe you have to do more yoga or exercise or therapy or whatever it happens to be for you. So take it up a notch. You know, if you're doing the same thing you were doing to deal with an energy that's five times bigger, it might not work anymore. So if you're feeling low or heavy or stuck, you might have to put in more time into your practice. And what better time than when you're at home? So set up a meditation space if you don't have one. You know, focus on building a little bubble for yourself that you could sit in and really shift your energy. And then by the time you do that and you're like, wow, I really got it, they're going to lift the all the social distancing guidelines, and you can be like, God damn it, I just found some peace. And then your next challenge will be to go outside and find it outside amongst
everybody. Back in the world, yeah.
Being in the world, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we are in our own personal caves, right? Like that's the picture of finding yourself is to go off and meditate in the cave for however long. And it's like, well, here it is.
I've been growing caveman levels of chest hair.
Yeah.
I had to shave my own head last week. I did. I was like, what am I going to do? I
have
to
shave my own head. Yeah, true.
Reminded me of what I used to do when I lived in a few different places.
Yeah.
Yeah. India, sometimes I'd shave my head, but I would also go to the barbershop because it's like a dollar, and they would like work on you for like 40 minutes, and it was amazing. So I would also shave my head, yeah, on occasion.
Yeah.
So get to work, yeah, everybody.
So meditating, you know, and frequency. I mean, I'm with you, David. Meditate for an hour. Frequency is just as important, maybe more important. So start to carve out a time, maybe a couple times a day. So even if you can only sit for 15, 20 minutes, you do that twice a day, and pretty soon you'll be find yourself sitting for a half hour, and then pretty soon an hour.
Yeah.
Pretty soon may not want to get up.
That's right. Like I teach, I have meditation school where I teach live, and people have been really showing up more than ever, which has been great. Just like really showing up and doing the work. And so I've been happy to see the progress that so many of my students have been making. It's been really, really nice. And also on Insight Timer, I see a lot of people showing up and doing the work. I'm getting more people finishing like my 30-day courses. Like I see them finishing and then messaging me more than they used to. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I've been seeing that more people kind of showing up, being a little more, I hate to use the word serious, but serious about it. Like it's more become more important to really sit down and work with going inward and kind of releasing and finding that balance. And I've been seeing it, you know, it's a little more challenging now to do that for some, because we are pulled in many directions, not in necessarily a productive way, but just into the different dramas and things that are going on. So I've had to work a little bit more to help people kind of find their way back to equilibrium, because everything's a little bit sideways right now. But it certainly makes a big difference when they do, when they can get back to that center. And so many people, when they do get back to that center, what I keep hearing from people is they're suddenly seeing just what an opportunity we have to kind of change or remake a part of ourselves and ultimately our world. And that gets lost in the media dramatization. It's not the opportunity that's being explored. It's the fear.
It's like, hey, what did you do for 6 weeks in quarantine? I watched Tiger King twice.
Okay. Yeah. No,
once is enough is all I'm
once
saying.
Once is enough, yeah. No, so it's great to be able to find our inner alignment, because then we do see the opportunity. And seeing the opportunity in something does not negate the validity of the crisis.
Of course.
Because every single change has both the side where things are kind of disrupted, it has its disruption, and then it has the new emergence and of something hopefully greater or better. And that's the opportunity. And it's so easy to miss that side of it.
It is. So what Cody's saying is put your money into the stock market.
I'm not saying
that's what he told you to do that.
Not that kind
of
opportunity.
We'll check back in 5 years and see how you did.
Yeah. I want to cut.
What?
A percentage of how
there will be anything. No.
There won't be anything left.
No, oh my goodness, very much dude. Could be very much the opposite. I have, all right, we got to close it up in a moment here, but
yes.
Sometimes I'll watch the financial news and I have seen every single perspective on the financial news. We're going to have a V-shaped recovery. It goes down right back up. It's going to be a U. We're going into a Great Depression. This thing is going down like the Titanic. I've heard very smart people from big banks and trading hedge funds and everybody across the board say completely different things. And that was fascinating to me.
I've had that same experience, and my conclusion is nobody knows what's going to happen. That is what that means. It means nobody has a clue.
Yeah, nobody, but...
And somebody, one of them's going to be right, obviously, because all the bases are covered, but nobody actually knows. That's the funny thing.
That's right. Although, you know, when there was a financial collapse in 2008, it was if you were able to have some money to invest, it was generally a good opportunity. So there's always opportunity in destruction. There's always opportunity in these intense moments on the planet, whether they're internal or external. And it doesn't make you a bad person to use whatever you have in front of you to help you grow and shift. And then maybe you're able to help other people better as well. I think some people are staying small because they feel guilty or bad, but that's not going to end up helping anybody. Usually the most disruptive technologies and changes come out of these really intense times on the planet. So you get to decide, am I going to be part of that? Or am I just going to sit here and wait and be afraid? And I think the disruptive part, growing part, is much more attractive.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And so... Cool. With that,
we rambled a lot. Did we get to what we wanted to get to?
Oh, yes. Basically, me and Cody wanted to use this whole episode to say, sit your tuchus down and meditate more than you're meditating. Doesn't matter what style or technique. There's thousands of free, millions of free hours probably at this point of meditations online. And we've shared our favorite resources many times, other than our own stuff. But like Insight Timer, I think, has a lot of really good content. One of my favorite books, The Untethered Soul. Lovely, if you've never read it. Obviously, The Power of Now. Beautiful book. Get on there and find something that works for you.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to explore, to try some things. Yeah, not everything works right away, or not everything works for everybody, but there's so many resources now. It's amazing.
And I'm going to give out Cody's phone number here. I'm just going to put it right up to the screen.
Just flash it. Yeah.
If you have any questions, just call him. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening to the Energy Matters podcast. We hope that you stay super safe and grounded in this time on the planet. And if you're not on our email list and you want to get on it, it's energymattersacademy.com. We wish you all the best, and we will see you next time. Take care.
Yeah, stay safe, stay sane, and take up meditating. Yeah. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman, brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.